First of all, Senator Kevin Cramer, then he can introduce our special guest today on the program, and we'll get to this important topic. Welcome back, Kevin.
Always good. Thank you, Scott. I always look forward to Fridays. This is a special one because I'm actually in Bismarck. I'm not in the swamp, so glad to be here with the fresh air. And I'm really, really pleased to have with me somebody, everybody that listens to this show knows, of course, Stephen Miller. Pretty much everybody in the country probably knows Stephen Miller and knows something about him. But what they may not know about Stephen is that he's widely regarded by people who might even surprise you, some people who just know his heart, that he is a great patriot. And because he's such a great patriot, he has used his intellect to help draft policies as a senior policy advisor for Donald Trump and the director of speech writing for Donald Trump, but he's helped shape policies that reflect that patriotism. And he is probably worked as hard and as smart on immigration policy for the president as any other policy. And by the way, while we focus on the border today, I do hope, I mean, if people have other thoughts or questions, even, you know, maybe a little later in the show that aren't as directly related but want to take advantage of the opportunity during this hour to talk to us about whatever's on their mind, that's great too. But I really wanted to have Stephen on with me today while this crisis is front and center. And Scott, unfortunately, it's not as front and center as it ought to be because, of course, to your point, there's nothing to see here is the mantra of the Biden administration in the middle of a crisis. And unfortunately, too many of their friends and, their enablers in the mainstream media are sort of providing that, but it's getting harder and harder for them to keep the crisis out of the front pages and the TV screens, and thanks to a lot of other competitive forms of media like this show. So, Stephen, thank you so much. I'd let people know that when I was on Air Force One with Stephen flying out to North Dakota with President Trump and other members of the North Dakota Congressional Delegation, we had a robust discussion about border security, and I raised the point that while we're not a southern border state, we are the northern border state, and that piqued Stephen's interest as well as we talked about, you know, the porous, walls or porous borders. They present opportunities for all kinds of mischief, regardless of where they are. And the thing I'll never forget, Stephen, was when John Kelly, and this is why I kind of wanted to highlight, John Kelly said to me, with Stephen standing right there, there is no person who's ever worn the uniform of the United States military that is more patriotic than Stephen Miller. And so, Stephen, glad to have you on What's on Your Mind, and especially pleased that you could join me for a talk radio town hall.
Thank you so much. With an introduction like that, I should probably just thank you, hang up the phone, and then leave it there, because I can't possibly rise to the level of expectations that have been set with that extraordinarily gracious introduction. And I want to just take this moment to return it in kind and say that every day I wish I could live in North Dakota so that I could have Kevin Cramer as my senator. The people of your state are so lucky to have a true citizen patriot representing them in the United States Senate. And I was in Washington. I was in the swamp, regrettably, in some respects, since the day I graduated from college. But it's been an honor to be there. But I've lived and worked in D.C., on Capitol Hill, and then, of course, for President Trump, literally since I graduated from college. And I've never met a public official, let alone a U.S. senator, who is more single-mindedly dedicated to their state's interests above all else than Kevin Cramer. And that's the whole point of the system of government that our founders put together, that a state would be able to elect two senators to go to Washington to provide equal representation to that state under our system of federalism, and to make sure that, in this case, North Dakota's interests are always front and center. And I can just tell you, having worked on Capitol Hill and then in the White House, that Kevin never, ever loses sight of that in everything that he does. And so it's a real privilege to be here with you on the show. I've enjoyed getting to know you and getting to spend time with you over the last 4 years now, especially during our long conversations on Air Force One. And so I hope I can illuminate some of these issues for the audience today.
I want to tell you something you might not know, Stephen, and that is that Senator Cramer's race against Heidi Heitkamp, which many people said couldn't be won, she was a safe Democratic seat. Kevin got the race. It became a race, but Kevin won that race by 11 points. and in no small measure to North Dakotans' concerns about illegal immigration. And the polling proved that out. They were worried about sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, and in general, the border crisis as well. So, you know, here we are way up on the northern plains and have neighbors to the north in Canada, and North Dakotans care about this issue as much as anything. This may be a, you know, for lack of a better term, a no-brainer for the Republican Party, for conservatives to understand how people in every corner of this country, not just those that are being invaded to the south by this illegal mob, care about this issue. I mean, this is something every, for that matter, Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green, whatever, ought to understand and ought to talk about. Do you agree with that?
I think the most important thing that I would want to say at the beginning to your audience today, having worked on the front lines of this issue now for so many years, is that illegal immigration is a crisis affecting all 50 states. No state is immune. Now, your state obviously is a northern border state, so you have unique threats, including national security threats that emanate from the northern border in addition to the southern border. But with respect to mass illegal immigration across the southern border, they don't just stay in the border states on the south. They move into every single state in the country. And when you have the policies of this current administration, which are getting less attention now, but equally as dangerous, to shut down interior enforcement, what that means is that right now, not a month from now, not a year from now, right now, it is the policy of the United States government that if an illegal immigrant in North Dakota is arrested for the vast majority of crimes in your state, so, you know, robbery, theft, battery, drunk driving, etc., they're arrested. Well, under the Trump administration, ICE would come and pick them up and remove them from the country. Under the Biden administration, that illegal immigrant will be released back into the general population to re-victimize and re-offend against North Dakotans. And so this is a very real public safety crisis that's happening right now, not off in the future. And I think that's a really important point to understand.
All right, Senator Kramer, I'm going to sort of let you two kind of go back and forth on the questions maybe for Steve, and then we'll take some calls as well when we come back. Got about a minute before the break, so go ahead with the first question.
Stephen, maybe before the break, just if you could just describe what has happened in this short time frame. You know, previous Trump administration regulations versus current policies. What happened in such a short time to flip this whole thing?
Yeah, the new administration has effectively opened Pandora's box. And so during the Trump administration, we put in place a series of policies. Now, it took a few years because the ACLU and activist judges tried everything they could to stop us. But we put in place policies to fully effectuate the immigration laws of the United States, laws that have been on the books for decades. Among the most important changes we made was the Remain in Mexico policy, based on a statute passed in the Clinton administration, that allows us to return illegal immigrants requesting asylum to Mexico, as well as Safe Third agreements that allow us to place people in alternate countries instead of our country if they're making an asylum request. This ended asylum fraud, where migrants who enter illegally are coached to make fake asylum claims to get entry into the country. But those policies ended that, and therefore ended catch and release. The new administration has canceled those policies and restored catch and release. That's the primary reason why you see the tidal flood that is now heading towards our southern border.
Man, oh, live. We'll talk more about this on the other side of the break. The cancel culture even extends to the border, folks. You can't even make this up. More with Stephen Miller, senior advisor to President Trump, and Kevin Kramer's Talk Radio Town Hall. Border crisis edition of the Talk Radio Town Hall. Fast becoming the big story of the Biden administration. There's so much so fast being thrown at us. North Dakota has a giant target on it. Because of the climate action plan, the federal lands issue, the Keystone XL pipeline. But we're drinking from a fire hose. It really feels like they've been planning all these undoing of the Trump administration policies for 5 years, led probably by Barack Obama and who knows who else, of just these really radicalized policies that are pretty amazing. Kevin, back to you. And then whenever you're ready, we have some calls waiting to go as well for Stephen Miller, senior advisor to Donald Trump.
Sure. So I want to tee one up for Stephen, though, because I think the discussion we were having off air about what's motivating people, what's motivating the Biden administration, what motivates Democrat leadership in Congress, and I would submit to you that part of what's motivating Democrats in general is that they were Donald Trump's ideas. they never even considered that maybe they were really good ideas that actually worked. But also remember, when we talk about asylum, the reason that so many, when given an appropriate process for determining whether they should get asylum, the reason they don't meet the criteria is because they don't meet the criteria. They are coming from places where you have to prove that you fear persecution in your home country, and it has to be persecuted on account of race or religion or nationality, political opinion. This is not a criteria that is met. Now,
isn't that a difference between a refugee and a migrant?
That is. So, and that's the point. But a lot of these people are coming, and then that's why they come into the country and they use asylum as an excuse. So, Stephen, maybe just talk about that a little bit and talk about what is motivating this.
Yeah, you covered a lot of important points there. So I'm going to walk through them and then cut me off as soon as I've gone on too long. But I want to start with the last point first, because terminology matters a great deal. And if you're reading any newspapers in America, you're almost certainly probably getting the wrong terminology. At least the major newspapers, I should say, are using a lot of the wrong terminology. Being an asylum seeker or being a refugee has a specific meaning in law, and Kevin was referring to that. You have to be a victim of government persecution. This system was created after World War II to respond to the ethnic genocide that took place and the religious genocide that took place. And, you know, being Jewish myself, that's something that is very, very important to me. The asylum system is for people who are being persecuted because of their religion, their race, their ethnicity, or their political beliefs. So a good example of that would be if somebody was a Uyghur in China. And so what we have here is an economic migration. It has nothing to do with asylum. You have individuals that are not in any way being persecuted in El Salvador, Honduras, or Guatemala, the three surge countries, on account of any legally protected trait, like religion or ethnicity or race or political belief. But what's happened over the years is that far-left legal groups who provide free representation to illegal immigrants, as well as the smugglers, coyotes, and traffickers south of the border, have developed a system, or perhaps better put, a scam, whereby they say the words that trigger an asylum process in our laws to gain illicit entry into the country. It's designed to overload and crash the system. That's what was happening under Barack Obama. That's what we inherited. One of Donald Trump's greatest achievements was solving that problem by saying to anybody who lodges a frivolous asylum claim, great, then you can make that claim from Mexico, but you're not going to be released into the United States. And once people realized they weren't going to get free entry into the country, they stopped coming. Then later on, we added additional agreements with Central America to process asylum claims there, so likewise, you couldn't get into the country illegally. And if you did, you were sent home. That was the system we put in place. Now, to the second question, why did they get rid of it all? So one of the reasons is, correctly as Kevin said, is there was this reflexive, juvenile attitude of, well, if Trump did it, then we're going to do the exact opposite. So if Trump said there's gravity, we're going to say there's no gravity. The problem with the border is that when you defy the laws of human nature, in addition to the laws of the country, there are real-world consequences, and there are immediate consequences. You know, when Democrats deny science and Democrats deny truth and fact, the consequences can be sometimes delayed. They can happen, you know, months or years later. But when you deny the laws of human nature on the border, the consequences are instant. So when you put in place a policy that says, if you lodge a frivolous asylum claim of any kind at all, you are guaranteed release into the country, then masses of people will come illegally, not just from Central America, but from all of planet Earth. You know, if you see illegal immigration statistics, as I was able to for many years, you'll see that you have illegal immigrants coming from every corner of the planet. It is a global phenomenon. Anyone who can afford a plane ticket to the Western Hemisphere can then get here, pay a smuggler, and make the rest of the way up to our southern border. But in addition to that reflexive, we're going to just undo whatever Trump did, even if it worked, even if it was successful, consequences be damned. In addition to that, there's a deep vein of radicalism in the Democratic Party on immigration that, in my view, has made the party unsuitable to govern. Unless and until that changes, unless and until they recognize that borders exist and there has to be a consequence for violating those borders, the Democratic Party can't possibly govern the country. You can't have a party that's in charge of America that has the attitude that borders don't exist.
I've got to believe there's a lot of Democrats in the heartland of America, the Northern Plains, where our audience is, that are embarrassed by this. I sure hope so. It's time to speak up. More Senator Kevin Cramer back with more with Stephen Miller, senior advisor to President Donald Trump, and someone that obviously is demonstrating that he has a whole lot of heart here. If I read Vanity Fair right, they don't think he has a heart. But you can't even believe the things that are said about this man that just are so vile. I read that Vanity Fair article. I said, if you ever need a better example of the state of journalism today in America, read this and tell me this is journalism. It's just absolute garbage, but I guess it means he's right over the target, right?
That's exactly what it means, Scott. And it also tells you that, yeah, he struck the nerve. But I have to first say, we are talking about asylum, and refugees versus migrants, and I want to get into the humanity of it, because the claim is, when you use those terms, that if you go against the Biden administration's policies, that you're somehow inhumane. Although I have to say, on behalf of Protestants everywhere, it's great to know that there's a Monsignor like Schumacher who keeps track of the loopholes for us. So that's a very humane Monsignor. But anyway,
Stephen. I'm always looking for loopholes in Lent. Sorry, go ahead for Steve.
So, Stephen, tell us, is this humane what we're talking about? Who's on the right side of this humane argument?
That's exactly the right question to be asking. And you're right. The far open borders left has waged very vicious personal attacks against me. And I don't care about it personally, because I'm just trying to do my part for the country. What I care about are the millions upon millions of patriotic, law-abiding Americans who, by extension, are vilified for wanting a safe, secure, and lawful border. The question of who is on the right side of morality here actually is the most important question. And my advice to Republicans everywhere would be not to shy away from this debate, but embrace it. Joe Biden's policies are pushing young people into the hands of human smugglers, traffickers, coyotes, and criminal cartels who are viciously abusing them, including sexual assault and many other forms of physical abuse prior to their arrival in the United States. Those organizations profit financially off of that human misery. This is a business for them. And in specific, in Mexico, the criminal cartels control illegal immigration. You can't illegally immigrate to the United States without paying a ransom, in effect, to these cartels. They control smuggling operations that run through Mexico. So when you incentivize and reward illegal immigration, you are financing the very criminal organizations that spread misery and suffering throughout the Western Hemisphere. Just think about for a second the situation in Mexico as an example. Mexico's had large-scale illegal immigration into the United States for years. Has it made Mexico safer? Has it made Mexico's cartels weaker? Has it made the rule of law stronger? All that's happened as a result of that is the cartels have become richer and more powerful. And the same is true in Central America. So if you think about it this way, if the criminal cartels had a vote on immigration policies, would they vote for Biden's policies or Trump's policies? If they had a vote, every criminal cartel in the Western Hemisphere would vote for Biden's policies. So a simple thing to say to any of your friends or neighbors or colleagues when you're discussing this issue is that I will not support any immigration policy that benefits criminal organizations that prey on innocent men, women, and children. That's a pretty basic starting point. And then the last point I'll make about this is that the human capital in these countries that's being vacuumed out by these cartels, the young people that are being pulled out of El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras and other countries, are necessary for those countries to succeed in the future, too. They need their own young people. So you're creating this vicious cycle of poverty and violence by allowing mass illegal immigration to continue. And then, of course, here in America, what does it mean? It means more drugs get into the country. It means that wages are pushed down. It means that legal immigrants and U.S. citizens currently living here are disadvantaged in the job market. And, of course, it puts an enormous strain on our health care system, our public schools, and our tax dollars overall. So everybody loses in this except criminal organizations and very, very large businesses that seek lower-cost labor. But that's pretty much it.
All right, let me take some calls here and also some texts. How about that, Kev? You ready?
Go for it. You bet.
All right, Senator Kevin Cramer, Talk Radio Town Hall, special related to the crisis at the border today on the program. And your questions or comments, welcome for these two individuals that are right in the middle of this fight now nationally. Gary in Hatton, North Dakota, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, and good morning to the Senator and Stephen. I have a little different wrinkle. There's probably at least 100 people I know of, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, eastern North Dakota, that own property just north of Odette in the Lake of the Woods area. We pay taxes. In fact, the tax statement stated if we didn't pay it within, I think, about 3 weeks, it would be turned over for collection. Yet it's a year and a half since I've been able to utilize the property. And we've had our shots. And I'd like to know a good reason why, if we can't flash our vaccination card at the border along with our passport, that we shouldn't be able to utilize our property up there.
Well, I think the question, you know, you make an important point, Gary, but I think the question is, you know, probably more aimed at Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, who's, I gather, is the reason you're not able to use your property because of his restrictive policies on you know, pandemic issues. And, of course, Canada's very, very strict policies of not being able to come in from the north on the Lake of the Woods. But I don't know that how it applies necessarily to this, other than, and those borders can be crossed rather easily up north as well. Just fortunately, at this point, we don't have a crisis there that we know of.
Ruger in Golden Valley for Senator Kevin Cramer. Go ahead, Ruger. And Stephen Miller.
Morning, guys.
Hey, Ruger.
This is for
good morning
for Senator Cramer and your guest. So when Trump was president, and even now, these leftist states controlled by leftists, you know, they just disregarded any laws of border crossings or illegals being, you know, that legal sanctuary states. Why doesn't the governor of Texas and Arizona and, you know, I think New Mexico and California, they're not going to do it. But since Tommy Fisher got his money, which is fine with me, go talk to Tommy Fisher and say, hey, governor of Texas said keep building this wall. Just do it on your state.
All right, let's take that up from there. And I have a similar comment from a texture that says, why not Texas assert states' rights? Texas has treaty, verify it, 1953. You know, why doesn't an independent republic do what it can do? Steve, what do you think of that?
Yes, that's a great question. Texas is one of the states that is leading the most right now on the litigation front, for which I give them great credit. And I've got a lot of good friends in the Texas AG's office in terms of suing the Biden administration over their illegal policies on immigration. With respect to the border wall issue, it's very complicated because you got state-owned land, federally government-owned land, and then you have privately owned land. And so if the federal government isn't going to police or protect the land that is privately owned or the land that is owned by the federal government, then it makes it very difficult to have any kind of meaningful dent in illegal immigration. And it's very difficult for a state to compel the federal government to fulfill its constitutional duties. But that's what's going to be tested right now in court. And I think that every state, not just border states, I think every state with a conservative attorney general should be seeking to defend its rights in court, because no government, no president has the right to suspend the immigration laws of the United States. If so, then we don't have a democracy. What's the point of having elected all these congresses and presidents in years past to enact all these statutes if one president can come along and declare them null and void?
Another texter says, ask why the refugees in North Dakota are called new Americans and when this was made law. Our Burleigh County Commissioner, Becky Matthews, works for this program and talks of new Americans often.
Yeah, you know, the term new Americans, it's funny. We were talking earlier about language, but is one that's increasingly propped up in recent years. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to change the language of immigration to make it impossible for normal people to communicate about the issue. Right? So the technical term that Bill Clinton used was illegal alien. And that's a very technical term in U.S. statute, in U.S. code, that has a very precise meaning. Right? Then that became illegal immigrant, and then it became undocumented immigrant. Then it just became immigrant, they dropped undocumented, and now it's just new American. I think it's very important for citizens to not let their language be taken away from them. Language is how you communicate, it's how you express thought, it's how you debate issues. And so we all have a responsibility here to push back and not allow words to be changed to erase the meaning of core concepts and issues.
All right, here's another one. Go ahead and roll that. Okay, hold that. One sec, Kev. Sorry, go ahead, Kevin.
I was just going to say, to Stephen's point there, North Dakotans might recall North Dakota native son Dick Armey, when he was majority leader, wrote his book Armey's Axioms, because he had a number of them, and one of his axioms is the politics of greed wrapped in the language of love. Language matters.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. Here's an off-air call we had earlier. Go ahead and roll that, Kevin.
Ask Kevin Cramer why we can't basically subpoena the conversations with the other world leaders that Kamala Harris or he's talked to him.
All right. I don't know if that's necessarily related to the border, but I've heard that from others to say, this was obviously a tool of the swamp against Donald Trump. What is Joe Biden saying in these conversations? Why not the Congress subpoena them just like they did as part of the impeachment proceedings? We'll give you a chance to answer that after we come back, rather, and then wrap up our special edition of the Talk Radio Town Hall today with Senator Kevin Cramer and Stephen Miller, senior advisor to President Donald Trump. More after this. A different topic, Stephen, but we have somebody that has to ask you about the election and about what you think actually happened and whether or not you've seen absolute proof. The 2-hour documentary that Mike has put together with subject matter experts, getting into chapter and verse of what happened in Antrim County, Michigan, for instance, and General Thomas McInerney talking about scorecard and hammer programs designed years ago after 9/11 to fight foreign actors and spy on machines and affect outcomes of elections. These are subject matter experts speaking about what they saw firsthand in the election. Have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't. But I find the simplest way to put this, and I think that Kevin will agree with me, because it's a way that regardless of what party and what viewpoint you have, you can really just grasp and understand, is that if the election rules were the same in 2020 as they were in 2016, and especially in the swing states, then President Trump would have won by even more electoral votes than he won in 2016. The Democrats illegally, because they didn't work through state legislatures, they did it at the county official level or the Secretary of State level, and then, of course, also in Georgia as well, where there is a Republican administration, they changed the election rules, whether it's to weaken signature requirements, to get rid of registration requirements, to weaken identity checks, et cetera, to mail out ballots without knowing who they're going to, so on and so forth.
Yeah,
to facilitate a different election outcome. And it's imperative that GOP-led legislatures enact tough election integrity measures so this can never happen again.
Senator Cramer, that's what you've called legal theft. Same thing.
It is, except that so there is this constitutional point about legislatures passing laws, not election officials, which is why Senators Hagerty and Rubio and I have introduced legislation that prohibits federal funds from going to states who violate their own election laws. But that's another show. Yeah.
Another texter says, oh, by the way, we didn't get your take quickly, if you wouldn't mind, on the caller before the break, who basically said, why isn't Kevin, you and your colleagues subpoenaing the conversations that Joe Biden is having since that was good enough for the swamp to do to Donald Trump?
Well, one reason might be we run the risk of being bored to death if we listen to them. But beyond that, I think there needs to be a reason, obviously, to subpoena. And I just remind people that when the transcript of the Ukrainian president's conversation came out, and even more recently, a conversation with Georgia election officials, it was to the benefit of Donald Trump. It's what acquitted him, really. I don't know that they had to even be subpoenaed. They were just released because, it was available, and But, you know, if at such time it becomes, it becomes a time when it's important to find out what somebody said to somebody. If it's a transcript or something's available, I'm sure it would be subpoenaed. Right now, there's nothing interesting enough to subpoena.
You know, Stephen, I'm curious what you think about that. I mean, the treatment that you and the president endured and so many members of the Trump administration. Hogan Gidley's a buddy of mine. I knew him from the Santorum campaign.
Same.
I talked to him, when we were at the White House to interview the president one time when the NDSU Bison were there being celebrated, and just kind of asked, "Hey, what most surprises you?" I think Chris Berg, actually, from Point of View, said, "What most surprises you?" And we're just shooting the bull, and he said, "Well, when we got here, when I got here with Sarah, there was probably 80% of this place that was against us, as in the White House, as in that complex, as in the executive office of the president." And he says it's a little better now, but it's 50%. And I thought, my gosh, do people understand that the president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, duly elected by the people, fought his own government day in and day out? How do you operate in an environment like that, Stephen?
Yes, you actually raised one of the most important questions of all, which would be a great hour-long feature unto itself, which is about the deep state and the idea that you have. I know the term sounds conspiratorial, but the concept's actually very straightforward. You have a permanent civil service that cannot be fired, that is mostly left-leaning. So you elect a president, and he puts in a small handful of political appointees, but those appointees, in turn, oversee a permanent career staff that are largely very liberal, largely very left-leaning, that have lifetime appointments. Imagine if you elected Senator Cramer, but he was forced to retain Heidi Heitkamp's staff for the rest of his time in the Senate. How would that work out?
Yeah, no kidding.
He'd be fine because he's Kevin Cramer, but you get my point.
Yeah, no, we sure do. Kevin, we're out of time, unfortunately. This has been one of the best hours ever of Talk Radio Town Hall.
It sure has.
And it says a lot because we've had a lot of them back to your time as a House member, and I wish more U.S. senators would do this, and I wish they'd have somebody with the heart and the patriotism of Stephen Miller join them because, boy, oh, boy, what a treasured asset he is for our cause and everything we believe in.
I'm
thank
humbled
you
by
so
your
much,
words,
Stephen.
And I'm honored to join you.
Yeah, Kev, go ahead. Last word is yours.
Just thank you very much, Stephen, for sharing your intellect and experience with us. It's incredible.
God loves you, and so do I, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening.